Hi, my name is Danae King, and I'm the religion and immigration reporter here at the Dispatch. And I'm sitting here today with Mark Ferencek and Marty Schladen, both reporters as well here at the Dispatch. And we're going to discuss the pre-sex abuse crisis that's going on across the country and actually across the world right now, and kind of center it here in Columbus, where the Roman Catholic Diocese of Columbus has released a list of priests it say are credibly accused of child sexual abuse on Friday, a week ago, March 1st. And so since then, reporters here at the Columbus Dispatch have been taking a look at that and reporting pretty thoroughly on what's going on with it and different aspects of it. So today we'll tell you a little bit about that. And also, I'm going to have Marty tell you guys about what we're going to do next on Sunday.
Well, I think what we're working on builds on what's happening up until now. When the diocese initially released its list, it was the last in Ohio to do so. It spent 16 years working on that list. When it came out, we at the Dispatch, not me, but my colleagues, did an amazing job of identifying five more people, like within a day, who should have been on that list. And within a couple of days, the diocese itself came back and added names to it. So I think there was a feeling among a lot of people that this was not an attempt by the diocese to be as forthcoming as possible, but to minimize the problem for reasons that only they can explain. But one of the things we want to look at over the weekend or on Sunday is, what were the institutional factors at work here within the diocese and outside of the diocese? And I think one of the things we learned is it's a really powerful institution. Isn't that right, Danae?
Yeah, and it's really kind of insulated, not only by what goes on within the diocese, which is that these cases are largely judged not only by Catholics, but by the bishop himself and other priests who are colleagues or the superior of the priest who might have committed this abuse. And they also, during their process, look into the reputation of the accuser, which a lot of advocates have questioned and even called victim blaming. So that's kind of what goes on within the diocese. But outside, there's several laws on the books that really protect abusers and their employers. And so we also take a look at that. And what's, I think, is important from what Marty said is also to realize that these lists of accused priests have been out for years, since the early 2000s, when the Boston Globe did its spotlight series that exposed this network of cover-ups of priest sexual abuse in the Diocese of Boston. And so the Archdiocese of Cincinnati put its list up then. And then last year, when the Pennsylvania grand jury released its report and found more than 1,000 children who had been abused in several dioceses in Pennsylvania, even more people released lists. And that was in August and September. And so for the Diocese of Columbus, which has been promising its list since September, to not release one, you know, in the almost two decades previous, and then to wait 6 months, is also really important to recognize, I think. And so I'm going to ask Mark to tell us a little bit more about one potential impact of this list and of the diocese waiting.
Right. So there are about 280,000 Catholics in the Columbus Diocese. So that's about the 23-county area. You have to think that a number of people are thinking about contributions, what they would give to the church, the diocese, the capital projects. A number of parishes have things going on. In my home parish at St. Brendan's, they're doing something. They're having capital fundraising campaign there, as they are at the other churches here in the diocese. So the question is that, are people affected enough by this where they're going to say, this really bothers me, it took them so long to do something about this, to release lists, and yet I'm contributing money to the diocese and other causes. Should I continue to do this? And in a story that we did this week, there was a retired priest in New Jersey who's with a group called Catholic Whistleblowers, and he was abused himself when he was younger by a priest, he said. And he said, if the people would have started to withhold money years ago when these reports first started to come out, then the problems would have been taken care of much more quickly. And people, any kind of an organization is going to respond to money. And if people start withholding money and they don't contribute, maybe that would have made people positions of power in the diocese across the country to do something quicker. He also said, though, which I think is true as well, is that a lot of people will say, yeah, but you know what? I really like my priest. I like my parish. I like the works that it's doing. So I don't want to penalize them. So I'm going to continue to contribute to them. And it's going to be interesting to see how much of an impact ultimately this has. Again, there are parishes that are raising money for capital projects. I know the one church I talked to, Father Dury of St. Catherine's over in the Eastmore neighborhood. I mean, they have a fundraising drive to raise $6.8 million for a capital program that they have over there for a new parish center and the Eucharistic Adoration Channel, and they've already raised $8 million. So, and that's after reports have come out across the country and also the names of priests here. So it didn't affect that campaign. Are people going to say, well, I'm going to contribute to my parish, but you know, it's like the bishop's annual appeal or the diocese appeal. Maybe not, because they were kind of slow on the trigger to release this list. So it's something we're going to have to continue to monitor.
Speaking of parishioners, you yourself were a parishioner last Sunday, weren't you, Mark?
Right. So it's interesting, again, all this is happening right as the Lenten season is beginning. So during the homily, our pastor at St. Brendan's was discussing things you can do for Lent, 10 things you could do for Lent beyond giving up chocolate or something like that. And one of the things he mentioned was basically not reading the news, and that maybe the news is biased, but not referring to anything in particular. And then after he went through this list of 10 things, he started to talk about fundraising. And I just thought that the sequence of that was very interesting.
Certainly was. Well, something that I'm really interested in, and I was raised Catholic, and I have a lot of sympathy for people who are members of these parishes. They get a whole lot spiritually and socially out of their participation there, and they don't want to see that go away. And I was speaking to a woman this week who said, you know, we're just very big, and that's why you hear about it, but hear more than anybody else. And I think it's true that this kind of sexual abuse takes place in other institutions. But I'd be interested today, if you formed an opinion about whether it's more prevalent within the Catholic Church than it is in, say, some other institution that deals with children.
Well, there's some research and some numbers out there about that that I know, Marty, you've looked into a little bit, just the multiplication of, you know, averages when it comes to this. And, you know, just from what we've learned from experts and such, it seems like there is a little bit higher of a prevalence of this in the Catholic Church. And a lot of people point to the celibacy requirement as a reason for that. As many people know, priests are required to be celibate when they're ordained in the Catholic Church. So that's been kind of a topic that's starting to be discussed more often.
Mark, what do you think? You spent your whole life in the arms of the Church. Do you have any impressions you formed?
Again, I think that it's difficult for many people when they see lists like this. I mean, I think a lot of people, when their list was released last week, everybody's going through there and saying, did I ever have this priest in my parish? Did any of my relatives ever have this priest? What parishes were they in? How many people did they interact with? How many people thought that they were great priests, great leaders, great with kids, and then, you know, were obviously floored by the information that got out there? And I think as a Catholic, you really struggle with this, because even if your experience has been totally fine within the church, the fact that it took this long for this information to come out, as priests were being moved between parishes, things were being covered up, it's very, very problematic.
And meanwhile, you know, the church is trying to show that it's taking this seriously, and this may be betraying a nugget from the story that's coming that Danae dug up, but it really struck me is that in its attempt to show that it was taking the crisis seriously, the Columbus Diocese appointed a panel to deal with these issues, and it appears to have met so infrequently that the head of the board doesn't even know the names of the other board members. What did you think of that, Danae?
Well, when I talked to him, I was, you know, just asking, kind of thinking of talking to a few other of the 11 board members. Two of them are priests and within the church, and the rest, other than the chair, are all Catholic. And so I was thinking maybe I'll reach out to them and see what this board does more in depth. And he couldn't identify who they are without looking at their resumes. So that was kind of a red flag for me because, you know, if they've been meeting and looking at these lists as they claim they have and really advising the bishop on his final decision on whether these allegations are credible or not, then you would think these board members, you know, might know each other and have seen each other several times, and especially in the past several months. But he said he's been a member since 2013 and they've met probably five or six times.
Since 2013, that's 6 years.
Yep.
So, Mark, do you think that I spoke to Franklin County Prosecutor Ron O'Brien, who's been prosecutor for a really long time? He's been involved with this since the release of Spotlight. And he seems to be satisfied that the reporting is on the up and up, and that to the extent that this stuff is going on, the diocese is being open with law enforcement about it. Do you think we have any way of knowing, given the structures that are in place right now, as to whether or not priests are continuing to abuse children and whether it's being covered up?
And that's a good question. I mean, with all the publicity that has come out over the past decade plus of this situation, that's the thing. We don't know. I mean, this could still be continuing on right now, and we don't know. I guess the question is, how are prosecutors going to be approaching these cases? How are they going to be taking them on? How much evidence are they going to need, and who are they going to go after? I think that's a question, yes?
Yes, it is. It is. And I think one of the problems that we're faced with in Ohio is Pennsylvania undertook a statewide investigation. And it seems to me that the primary goal of the investigation was not to come up with individual cases to prosecute. It was to judge the scope and the depth of the problem, going back way past the statute of limitations, just to see what we have on our hands. And what we're told here is that Ohio's a home rule state, so no statewide elected official can initiate such an investigation. Do you all have an opinion about whether such an investigation is necessary and how one might be undertaken?
I think that, you know, that's to be determined. But I think the interesting thing about that is the fact that, you know, in Ohio, there are statutes of limitations and damages caps for victims that really make it hard for prosecutors and attorneys to get at this issue. And so, you know, individually, case by case. So, you know, a prosecutor might hear about a case, but the average victim reports at 47 of their child abuse. So they are beyond both of Ohio's statutes of limitations for civil and criminal cases. And even if they aren't, they might want to seek a criminal trial, and the damages cap is $250,000.
You mean civil?
Yeah, a civil trial, but the damages cap is $250,000. And, you know, a lot of lawyers aren't going to take that case because it drags on for years.
And we learned that the Kristen Boggs, who filed a bill to remove this cap as it regards employers who negligently employ people who do these things and they know it, and she didn't get it out of committee last session. This session, she can't find a Republican co-sponsor. And as you've learned, lawyers won't take cases with that cap in place. So is it worth, without these legal remedies being available, is it still worth going back and investigating these things to see what happened?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think there has to be thorough investigations of any allegations or any cases, whether or not, again, the statute of limitations has expired, because people want to know. I mean, if you're a practicing Catholic, you want to know everything that had happened going back as far as you can, just to see how many people could have been affected, and also to see what the church did and didn't do with these specific cases.
And, you know, I read through the Pennsylvania report the day that Columbus released its list, and one of the things I was struck by, I just did a little simple arithmetic, and if you look at the number of abusive priests per Catholic in each of the six dioceses, it was in a really tight range. It was one priest per 5,000 to 7,000 Catholics. You know, and that's, I know this isn't the same thing as doing scientific research, but I think that was one of the things that they're trying to tell the country is this happened everywhere, and don't pretend it didn't.
Right.
Just while we're talking about numbers, I kind of wanted to add that, you know, locally we had originally 34 priests on the list, and after there were two added, you know, obviously it was 36. Of those, 22 were dead, and none of them, Ron O'Brien, the county prosecutor, said were in the statute of limitations when the abuse happened. So, you know, for all the victims of the priests on that list, there is no justice right now. And, you know, to Marty's earlier question of whether this is still going on, you know, when I talked to Ron O'Brien about this in September, he pointed to a statement by the former Bishop of Columbus, James A. Griffin, and it was released. It's dated April 26, 2002. And he says, you know, we've looked into this. We formed this review board that we talked about earlier. And he identifies one priest who has been accused and says that person was transferred to the chancery, that the headquarters of the diocese. And he said, after that person was transferred, quote, I have a deep belief that there is no priest in the Diocese of Columbus who is in an assignment which presents a danger to any minor, end quote. And, you know, right now there's a case going through court, and it was a footnote on the list because they said that since they just got an allegation of abuse by Monsignor Thomas Bennett, who taught at St. Charles Preparatory School for 40 years, ending with his death in 2008, that they haven't determined if the allegation is credible. But that allegation was entered for the 2002 to 2003 school year that this teenager was being abused. So, you know, I think it's important to point out that you have the bishop saying, you know, there's nobody abusing anybody. And then, you know, 4 months later, we have an allegation of abuse that's come out. So I think that's evidence that it's still going on.
So that maybe another just institutional ploy here is to say that was all in the past. We acknowledge it. We're going to sin no more. But there may be other problems that they just haven't solved.
Right. And are they truly going to police this internally? And again, when things come up, when an allegation surfaces, that they will immediately act upon that and release those names and say, we're investigating this because this happened, instead of moving people around like they have done in the past.
So speaking of investigating this, are we in our feeble way here at the Dispatch going to try to keep investigating this?
Definitely. I have plans for stories I'm going to keep working on, and that will come out next week. And I also am meeting with several officials from the diocese on Wednesday. They agreed to a meeting despite saying when they released the list that no one was available. So I guess time will tell what they have to say about their process and whether they're doing due diligence.
So that's probably a good place to wrap up and ask all the listeners / readers to please stay tuned, because we're going to stay on this story. So for Danae King and Mark Ferenchik, I'm Marty Schladen. Thank you very much.